Hello, this is Dave Jeffrey welcoming you to Optimal Life on the RPH Network. Ever think about choosing to return to work at an older age? Well, it's got challenges and it's got a lot of good points as well. The Australian Bureau of Statistics figures from 2016-2017 showed 178,000 Australians went back to work. They were aged 45 and older. They'd previously retired and had either returned to work or were planning to return to work. Now, Joanna Milbank, the Executive Director of the South Australian Job Matching Agency, DOME, that stands for Don't Overlook Mature Expertise. Well, Joanna says, organisation regularly has between 1,800 and 2,000 prospective employees. She said this includes some people aged in their 70s. We've not looked at the numbers, but certainly after the GFC in 2008, there did appear to be more older workers having to come back and rejoin the workforce. Why was this? Well, many of them did not have the super savings or the retirement savings that they thought they did. Then there's other groups who are just simply bored and like to do something. Despite research debunking mature worker stereotypes, ageism remains rife among employers who continue to hold an outdated and damaging beliefs. She said there's a perception around that older workers, they're less versatile, they take more sick days, they're not as productive, or they'll just get up and leave when they feel like it. Now, this group we mentioned before, DOME, is addressing workplace diversity. Milbank says, having a diverse workforce across ages, genders and culture, you have a positive business aspect. Council of the Aging's 2018 State of the Older Nation report indicated that one-third of older workers reported ageism and age discrimination. Now, Council of the Aging Chief Executive Jane Musserad said, many people tell us that they will need to work into their 60s and 70s and beyond. This is to secure such things as housing, to meet increasing costs in daily living, and because their superannuation is now inadequate. She said for a lot of people, employment is also an important part of their sense of self-worth. It's their opportunity to contribute and connect with their community and a way to keep learning and growing. She said thousands of older South Australians battle with ageism attitudes. This makes it needlessly difficult for them to stay in the workforce, let alone unretire and go back to work. COTA Peak Lobby Group for South Australia's 600,000 older citizens is calling on both government and industry to help. They want them to address an issue facing older workers and support the program to raise the rate of new start. Musserad said, for older job seekers, New Start is not a transitional allowance while finding a job. That's because older jobless take 188 weeks on average to find work. New Start means that they often lose any retirement savings and, in some cases, their house. That's because they cannot afford mortgage repayments. She said, we cannot expect people who are systematically discriminated against in finding work to live on New Start. This is not a preparation for retirement. It's soul-destroying. It is poverty-making and it is unfair. Okay, an interesting article there about going back to work, perhaps later in life, pros and cons to it. Well, like to know more, I've got a phone number and a website. The phone number, 08-8168-8776. And the website, information@seniors.asn.au. Okay, let's look at those details again. It's important for us older ones. Like to know more about going back to work at a later age? Dial this number, 08-8168-8776. Or go on the net, information@seniors.asn.au. Or something perhaps in the same line. This is called How to Keep Our Elderly Healthy and Appy. APPY. Apps are replacing aspirin as older Australians are taking command of their health through technological advancements. As empowering as this bold new frontier is, it's not a silver bullet, but it is used in conjunction with healthcare professionals. It's written by Tim Bowden and was in the Adelaide Times in August this year. The saying goes that an apple a day keeps the doctor away. But older Australians are finding the opposite is sometimes the case. With health monitoring technology usage more widespread than ever, South Australian retirees through their Apple, Android and other devices are connecting with healthcare professionals. They're doing this like never before, and they're taking greater ownership of their health. Dr. Victoria Wade of the University of Adelaide says more and more older people are becoming tech savvy and that this trend shows no sign of slowing down. She said instead of doctors telling patients, take two aspirins and call me in the morning, it's now take two apps and text me in the morning. Dr. Wade went on to say, I think the baby boomer generation is a lot more conscious of their health as a result of this technology. Aside from feeling younger, older Australians are using technology, particularly wearable devices like Fitbits and smartwatches. This enables them to live an active lifestyle so they can avoid moving into an aged care facility too early. A lot of older people are completely determined to stay at home as long as possible. They're not at all interested in moving into aged care or even retirement villages. Dr. Wade went on to say, we know that it's way, way cheaper to have someone in their own home than in a nursing home. Given the ageing population, I think this is the way to go. From heart rate and blood pressure monitors to step counters and sleep analyzers, Dr. Wade says digital health technologies are beneficial. But they should be used in consultation with healthcare professionals. That is, if they're being used to monitor a serious condition. She said, yes, there's a lot more digital health happening, but it only works really well in an integrated system. There's a lot that you can do yourself through monitoring, but if someone's got a serious chronic condition, then digital health works best when it's really well coordinated with your healthcare provider. Health technology has certainly come a long way in the past decade, and Dr. Wade, of all people, should know. 10 years ago, she helped set up the Royal District Nursing Services Virtual Hospital Unit, known as the RDNS. This allows nurses to prompt and observe patients taking their medication in their own home via the internet. Wonderful setup. It eliminates the need for a nurse to visit and allows the RDNS to offer a more efficient service. It's since improved the lives of more than 1,100 Australians. South Aussies, like Campbelltown's Patricia Healy, aged 86, is a diabetic. She's been using the VHU for the past 2 years. She engages with the RDNS nurse each week via her tablet. She said, I'm old-fashioned and I would never imagine talking to my nurse on a screen. She said, the RDNS installed my tablet and wireless broadband. They now observe me taking my medications. The best part is that it keeps my family and me happy. They no longer stress about my health because they know I have support. Now there's another great advantage to this as well. The service also provides a vital social outlet for those who may experience social isolation. Dr. Wade says, you certainly can have social interaction over a video communication. It may feel strange initially, but within a short period of time, the screen falls away and you feel like you're literally there with the person, she says. Well, that's a great initiative, how to keep elderly, healthy and happy. And the one thing they've got here is the Royal District Nursing Services Virtual Hospital Unit. Instead of a nurse coming round to visit you every day, you do it over the net, chat with them and they can monitor your progress as well. A great initiative. We're going to stay in the health vein a little, and I'm going to begin this item with a question. Would you, or anyone you may know, be interested in taking part in a year-long study into dementia? Now, there's a couple of qualifications here. I'll read the article, and at the end I've got a phone number and a website if you'd like to contact them. They're a bit specific. It says researchers are looking for people aged between 40 and 85 and with a diagnosis of vascular dementia or mixed Alzheimer's and vascular dementia. They'd like you to take part in a clinical trial which could lead to groundbreaking medical improvement development for treating the disease. Currently, more than 400,000 Australians are living with dementia. About 20 to 30% of dementia cases are thought to be vascular dementia. But pharmaceutical options for vascular dementia are seriously lacking. Recognising this, the teams from NICM Health Research Institute in Western Sydney and the China Academy of Chinese Medical Sciences have been working together to develop a unique herbal formulation. They developed Celuotong, or SLT. It's a complex combination of ginseng, ginkgo, and saffron. Results of initial trials showed SLT to be effective treatment for mild to moderate vascular dementia, with participants demonstrating significant improvement in multiple areas such as memory, orientation, language, and daily functions. Eligible participants will take two capsules of SLT or a placebo twice a day for 52 weeks. They will attend regular clinical visits so their health can be closely monitored. As well, there'll be a post-study follow-up visit 3 months after the conclusion. Now, anybody interested, here's how you contact them. You can phone 02-4620-3578, or you can email them at dementiatrial@westernsydney.edu.au, or you can visit them on www.nicm.edu.au/dementia-trial. Now, I'll come back in a moment and say that again. It sounds very interesting. Like, just take part in this important survey. There's a couple of criteria here. They're looking for people 40 to 85, and they need a diagnosis of vascular dementia or mixed Alzheimer's and vascular dementia. Like to contact them? Okay, a phone number first. 02-4620-3578, or email them on dementiatrial@westernsydney.edu.au, or you can visit them. It's www.nicm.edu.au/dementia-trial.
You're listening to Optimal Life on the RPH Network, and I'd like to share one of the information sheets from our sponsor, Seniors Rights Service, about what is and is not aged care advocacy. Aged care advocacy is a process of speaking up for or representing a person. It involves taking the side of the consumer. It involves the rights or entitlements of the consumer. It involves empowering the consumer. An aged care advocate will work with you by hearing your story, clarifying the issues, identifying your rights, identifying desired outcomes, providing information, providing possible strategies for action, identifying potential consequences of action, negotiating an action plan. And what it is not. Aged care advocacy as conducted by Seniors Rights Service is not complaints investigation. According to the Australian Standards Complaints Handling, the central objective of a complaint handling process is to investigate and resolve complaints made by individual complainants. Mediation is a process of dispute resolution in which a neutral third party facilitates discussion between disputants to seek a mutually acceptable solution. Participation is voluntary. Mediator is neutral, does not take sides. The mediator does not impose a decision on the parties. And conciliation. The third party's role distinguishes mediation from conciliation. Conciliators are often expected to contribute their own views and opinions during the conciliation process. The role of the conciliator is to achieve a fair resolution of a complaint. The conciliator's role is not simply to encourage a settlement, but rather to participate in the process and ensure that the settlement reached is just. This is from the Seniors Rights Service website information sheet, What Is and Is Not Aged Care Advocacy.
Virginia, thanks very much for that. It's a most important subject, isn't it? Legalities and rights. Well, now you're going to read an article on scamming. And I think it's most important. It's getting more and more prevalent. We're just about all of us getting calls, scamming calls. And I heard a beauty the other day. You book into a hotel and next thing the phone rings. And the scammers rung up the hotel and said, could I speak to, say, room number 315? Receptionist puts you through. You answer the phone. You're in room 315. And he says, oh, hi, this is the front desk here. You just booked in. We just didn't get the numbers on your credit card. Could you just read them out to us? Our machine didn't bring them up clearly. And I thought, what a great scam. Mm. You'd obviously say, oh, fair enough, yes, yes.
Mm, you would. Mm. And aren't they getting very, very clever?
Oh, look, they really
have to be very, very cautious. Beware of scammers.
Exactly. And I know you've got a bit of advice here for us.
I have. This is an article taken from www.theseniors.com.au. It's a story, Pay Up or Go to Jail. Just hang up. Pay your debt immediately or you'll be arrested. That's the line scammers are using to scare their victims into handing over money. New South Wales Police issued a fresh warning last week following reports that phone scammers impersonating police officers or Australian Taxation Office officials have been targeting people in the Camden area in Sydney. Queensland Police also issued a warning that in another scam, the victim has an outstanding tax office bill or debt that must be paid or they will be arrested. Usually, the scammers request this debt be paid via gift cards. To add to the authenticity, the caller identification number displayed is that of the local police station. It's unclear how the scammers are using the actual number. Police warn members of the public to be wary of any requests for personal details or payments made over the phone and urge people not to give out personal details or transfer money over the phone. The Australian Taxation Office will never threaten you with immediate arrest, ask you to pay money to receive or refund a payment, ask you to pay a debt via iTunes vouchers or prepaid credit cards or store gift cards, ask you to provide personal information such as your tax file number or credit card number via email or SMS, ask you to pay money into a personal bank account, direct you to download files from the internet or open attachments in unsolicited emails. ScamWatch has the following advice to stay safe from scams. If you receive a phone call out of the blue from someone claiming to be a representative of Telstra and the call relates to a problem with your internet connection, just hang up. If you have doubt about the identity of any caller who claims to represent a business, organisation or government department, contact the body directly. Don't rely on contact details provided by the person. Find them through an independent source such as phone book or online search. Remember that you can still receive scam calls even if you have a private number or have listed your number on the government's Do Not Call register. Link is external. Scammers can obtain your number fraudulently or from anywhere it has been publicly listed, such as in a phone book. Don't let scammers press your buttons. Scammers use detailed scripts to convince you they're the real deal and create a high-pressure situation to make a decision on the spot. Always keep your computer security up to date with antivirus and anti-spyware software and a good firewall. Only buy computer and antivirus software from a reputable source. Never give your personal credit card or online account details over the phone unless you made the call and the phone number came from a trusted source. Never give a stranger remote access to your computer, even if they claim to be from a reputable business. If you think your computer security has been compromised, use your security software to run a virus check. If you still have doubts, contact your antivirus software provider or a computer specialist. If you think you have provided your account detail to a scammer, contact your bank or financial institution immediately. If you have lost money as a result of this type of scam, please report the matter to your local police station. You can also report to Scam Watch or by calling 1300 795 995. That's 1300 795 995. And Dave, you know, the first one they mentioned about the person impersonating a Telstra employee, that's exactly the call I've been receiving all this week. They keep ringing and saying, we are working for Telstra and we want to ensure your security.
So you've had the same call more than once?
I've had more than once, yeah.
They're persistent, aren't they?
Yeah, they're very persistent. Mm. And so they gave me some very long numbers to show that I could identify them.
Right.
And that's how I could prove that they were. If I put those numbers into my computer, then I would be able to find out that in fact were legitimate. Well, if I put those into the computer, I would have lost the computer.
Exactly. So you did what you told us in that article you just hung up?
I did. I did indeed.
Excellent.
So this was a really important, interesting article from thesenior.com.au.
And I know we said this before, but they are just getting better and better, these scammers. There'll be a new one next week, that's for sure, you can bet.
Unfortunately, I bet. Yes.
Okay, this is Optimal Life on the RPH Network. Now, Virginia, this time we've got something that I think all of us just about will remember.
Oh, darling! Life with Jeannie Little. Hello, darling. That voice, that hair, those huge eyes and false eyelashes, and those outfits. Jeannie Little was a personality personified. She burst onto our television screens and into our lounge rooms with her first appearance on The Mike Walsh Show back in 1974. And we didn't know what hit us. That raucous voice, the catch cry, hello, darling, would soon enter the Australian vernacular. She was an instant sensation, so much so that she won the Gold Logie for most popular TV personality just 2 years later. What must it have been like growing up with a mother who was known for fashioning outfits from squares of toast, rubber gloves, hot pink balloons, or plastic sandwich wrap? Jean Little's only child, Katie M. Little, explains life with her unconventional mother in a new book, Catch a Falling Star. Jean was pregnant with Katie when she first hit our screens, so this is a first-hand look at what it was like to be Jean Little and her darling daughter. I grew up backstage, taken everywhere with her, Katie writes. In my mind, I can retrace our steps as I held her hand and followed her into the labyrinth of Channel 9 studios. While we continued to laugh along with the stick-thin empress of fun fashion, Jean was later to show she had so much more to give. As unthinkable as it seemed to so many, she won a part in Jerry Herman's Australian production of the hit musical Jerry's Girls, in which she had to sing and dance. With help from her husband Barry and dancing tips from Katie, Jean set to work. That show was a hit. Fast forward to 2010 and Jean's name is again in the headlines. It is revealed she has Alzheimer's disease. In 2018, 10 years after diagnosis, my mother Jean Little is still alive, writes Katie, who is patron of the Jean Little Alzheimer's Research Fund. This heartbreakingly honest book will have you laughing out loud, shedding a tear, and being presented with a rare glimpse into the personal life of one of Australia's most beloved celebrity families.
What a wonderful story. I believe that Jeannie Little, I never met her, but I believe she was just didn't act. That was just her. You did it so well, darlings.
I watched it a fair bit.
I know, we all loved her. And what a great picture there. You said she's got a dress made out of bottle tops, isn't it? And rubber gloves.
Yes, and balloons. How you do it, I don't know.
Thank you very much. A great tribute to a wonderful person. A little sad, although it sounds like they're doing some good work for Alzheimer's now,
yes,
too.
Yes, yes.
Good on them.
So, Dave, we had seven hints for dating a little earlier, and I've just found this article with the most beautiful picture of a man I'd love to date.
Now, this is not a bit of bias from the female point of view.
Oh, yes, it is. Idris Elba, who I think is a fabulous actor, And I would date him, even though he is at least 40 years younger. Never mind. It talks about deep voices are healthy. So you and I are obviously healthy. So men with deep voices are healthier, according to a study that offers further reason for the sex appeal of husky-toned stars such as Idris Elba. Scientists found that males with lower voices had more antibodies in their throats that fight off infection. It was previously thought women found men with the deepest timbre more attractive because it signified high testosterone and larger frames, which may have given men an evolutionary advantage. But a new study found those with a manly voice were also less likely to get ill. Throat swabs showed their bodily defences were better equipped to combat germs, a survival advantage making such men attractive to a potential mate. Well, now I know the scientific reason why I find Idris Elba very attractive.
So you're going to add that to your dating advice?
My dating advice, yes.
Excellent. Just before we go, though, I know you've got a special message.
I'd like our listeners to have a pen and paper handy so that they can write down the phone number and contact details for the Seniors Rights Service for anyone who is in need of legal advocacy, education, your rights, your voice. The phone number is 92813600. That is 92813600. That's a Sydney number, 02. Is the zone, or 1800 424 079. That's 1800 424 079. Interpreter service is on 131 450 if you want the interpreter service, and office hours are from Monday to Friday 9 till 5.
Virginia, thanks again for that item. Now, just before we go, we've almost come to the end of our program now. You've got a little more health advice.
Well, yes, because we are heading into a sleeping time. So snores bore holes in peaceful sleep. A peaceful night's sleep is becoming rarer after scientists discovered that heavy snorers have almost doubled in number over the past 20 years. Experts at London's Royal National Throat, Nose and Ear Hospital say soaring obesity rates and smartphone use could be behind the rise in rates of severe snoring. They found 7% of the population have sleep apnea, the most severe form of sleep disordered breathing, compared to less than 4% 2 decades ago. Researchers examined 1,239 adults and found almost 4 in 10 snore at least 3 nights a week, with men the worst offenders. In findings published in the journal Sleep Medicine, they suggest increases in obesity and the use of smartphones may help explain the rise. Our results suggest that sleep-disordered breathing is widely underdiagnosed, and taking into account adverse health effects caused by untreated obstructive sleep apnea, this indicates an urgent need for policymakers to increase efforts addressing this problem, the report authors said.
Oh, wow. A few of us could relate to that. Virginia, thank you so much. Look, that's all we've got time for in our program today. You have been listening to Optimal Life on the RPH Network. And Virginia Collins, I would like to say a very, very big thanks to you for helping out.
And thank you, Dave, and goodbye to all the listeners.
And we'll certainly look forward to hearing from you again very shortly. Bye now.
Bye.